Bug tales in the night, extreme vibration, unexpected strikes, blades make a motion, we'll be hooking skis before the night is through.
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast, a Jaybird. You can practically smell the two-stroke smoke across the Northwoods. It is springing and sprunging. What's the update for all the it's all, there's no ice, right? I've heard the river's super high. What's going up in your going on in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, water levels are coming up. We've been getting some rain, so that's a good thing. And yeah, the ice is gone, and the Southern opener starts in a couple days, and yep. Our general opener starts in a couple days up here. Not Muskie yet, not till Memorial Day. So, yeah,
crazy.
Things are looking good. Right on time.
We made it. Mm-hmm. Made it through the long, cold winter. And my goodness, you got Minnesota right there. People are sitting right now sharpening hooks in their living room amongst family and friends.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah. They had ice out, a couple weeks ago in central Minnesota, I heard. Yeah,
I talked to
talked
to Darcy Cox up there in Canada just for a second today, and it's like, you know, you got warm, it's breaking up, they're right there. It's finally, you guys, it's the wait is over. And for us Southerners that have been fishing the whole time. I don't know how you do it.
Sometimes I don't either.
I would go nuts. You know, you'd sit there in your snowed in. I'm sorry, whatever. Moving on, I was going to go somewhere with that, but let's not. Anyway, well, what's going on at the shop, Jay? You got fresh fat heads for all the fibs?
flatheads, you mean?
Flatheads, we got flat.
Yeah, a lot of people call them flatheads. We've got flat. Yeah, we got all the minnows. Wow. Got the worms. We got the fresh soda and candy bars. Jim bought candy bars today, too.
Oh, wow.
We'll be serving ice cold candy bars.
Alex, well, you know, it's funny. I say that, guys, because it's funny. It's just, this is the time when the store just turns into a tackle shop, right? Mm-hmm. And there's always those. It's fun. So, anyway, anything new? I think we're finally past, like, new bait time of the year, right? You got pretty much everything's out here. Obviously, we had the blade out there, which is going crazy, and your little tail for your Magnus Jr. It's exciting. I'm super excited to hear from guys on Magnus and the Magnus Jr. tail. You know, once we get kind of past the opener and it becomes mm-hmm. serious time, that's exciting. I'm excited to see.
Yeah, I got that thing on the water a couple of days ago, too. I don't know if I told you, with Tom and I went out and shot a few, you know, the video shorts I do on lure demos. So that thing looked great.
What, the little guy or which one?
Yeah, the Jr. tail on a Magnus. So I'll put that out soon. Looks great.
I don't know if you put it out or not, but yeah, that's cool. So, oh man, well, we better get after it here. We got a ton of questions, Jay. People are getting, it only gets worse throughout the year as people start putting fish in the bone.
But well, we've all got the itch around here, Stevie.
Well, there's salves for that. Like certain people, yeah, you can get rid of that itch.
There's an ointment, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you should probably get that looked at.
Okay, thank you.
I would recommend some. Anyway, something I was going to hit on here, which is, it's that season opener thing for a lot of people, and it is downsized baits. If you don't know that, if you haven't caught on to this yet, downsize, right? Don't come out of the gate swinging frickin', you know, a 10-inch Magnus, come out swinging double 10s and big baits. But the crossover thing of what we talk about all the time about busky fishing, kind of coined the term there years back about bass-sized presentations that are actually going to get you some musky in the net, which is a big part of my game, you know, when I'm doing that post-spawn and the early part of my season and when I've done, like, openers in other places. Going with downsized presentations that are, maybe they're not musky baits, right? And I think the air just kicked on. Sorry for the air sound there. But it's a thing where there's a lot of presentations that kind of fall into that realm that I don't think people should overlook. You know, we might not carry all of them, but it's worth looking at. Because, Jay, you think about something as simple as, you know, the Whopper Plopper, you know, which is the bass-sized little topwater there that we mm-hmm. carry. You know, all the way through a lot of different crankbait stuff where there's a ton of options there. But, the options are limitless, but there's so many different baits there where, you know, you want to have the high quality and you want to have the build. Jay, what are some of your, like, you know, I know you like jigs. Do you ever fish Cincos? What are some of your stuff you like as far as the downsize? Any busky baits that come to mind? I've got my list, but I don't know if there's any bassy, musky crossover stuff that you dig.
Two things. Yeah, for sure. Half-ounce spinner baits, you know, decent sized bass spinner baits, tandem stuff. That is deadly. I've caught a lot of muskies on that.
Are you talking just like your run of the mill, like the, I mean, a half, I mean, that's what do you say? Half ounce or quarter ounce?
Half ounce.
I mean, those are little dudes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, right now muskie isn't open, so you can, you know, fish bass. And, you know, that's something that early season I've caught a lot of. Well, throughout the season, you know, occasionally. If I am bass fishing in the section, I've caught muskies on that. But Husky Jerk, Smithwick, Pro Rogues, you know, like that five.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're 5 1/4 inch, something, maybe 5 1/2 inch, a suspending minnow bait like that.
Right.
Husky Jerk, the 14 size. That's what it is.
Right.
Those are great early season.
Anyway, you can't disagree with that. I know a lot of guys, like you were talking about, like the little, what was it, the wrap? What is it, Jay? The rappling you just mentioned? The
Husky Jerk, 14 Husky size. Jerk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful bait.
Sorry, I just went brain dead there for a second. Tons of muskies get caught on that. How are you fishing that guy?
Light tackle. Hooks are small and they're pretty much considered junk for musky, but they stick.
Mm-hmm.
And the split rings are equally awful. That right. is something where you actually could have. It's just, I mean, it's a bass bait. It's a bass slash walleye bait. So it's made to be fished at, you know, 10 to 14 pound monofilament, you know, light tackle. But that's something you want to use a real light leader, you know, like a 40 pound, 60 pound tops. Mm-hmm. Titanium would be good on a light leader. And, you know, a thin super line, if you have a light musky setup, that's a great bait. Weigh like a 1/2 ounce, they cast decent.
Yeah. And
how am I fishing it? Yeah. Stop and go. Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, early season, that thing works great because it just hangs. It's neutrally buoyant, so it hangs in the strike zone. It's very simple. You know, you work it like a... you would, you know, a month later in the season when you're working your slammers and cranes, you know.
Yeah.
Just a little bit slower pace and lots of pauses.
Make it easy. I mean, that is a classic that a lot of guys have caught on to. And, you know, I even go back to some of the minnow baits of like the wrap, like the balsa, like the husky, not the jerk bait, but like the husky rapless, right? Which one, uh-huh. like the F9s, F11s, F13s, which are small, buoyant little balsa wire through crankbaits, caught a ton of muskies on them. And it's just kind of something that gets ever overlooked. You know, it's not like something you're going to go, oh, that's a musky bait, but good Lord, do they catch fish, especially that early time.
The only time I could ever think I got a muskie on the first cast in a lake came on an F-13 black and sober.
Yeah.
And I got two more in 20 minutes. So that was a fun, unexpected kind of early season deal down south years ago. That was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those deals where if you're looking for that edge, because everybody's going to go out and, you know, most people are going to be downsizing, and I get it. It's like, there's that busky time of year. There's a bunch of stuff moves up shallow. Things are going to be just dirty shallow most places because you actually have kind of a standard ice out in that northern zone. It's going to be coming together quick where you're going to get a bunch of stuff joined up there. And I think that's worth the look of, you know, it's not something I base my whole game plan around, but the first couple weeks here, if things take a turn, that F11, that F13, like you were saying, the Husky Jerk, I personally, and I do a lot of damage with a lot of the deeper running bass crankbaits, right? There's two of them.
Yeah, you got that little favorite, that one I'm not real familiar with it, that old one that's been made in years.
Well, that's a AC Shiner, and those every one I have one of those are just trashed. I do throw a bunch of the Howlers, which are Livingston Lures Howlers. Randy Howe from the he's like their bass pro guy. Actually, just placed in the top 10 on a thing this week. But it's a deep running crank. I mean, it's really aggressive, but it's that kind of that meatbally minnow bait. You know, it's not the biggest body, and that there's the deep variant of that, and then there's like the deep impact. But I'll tell you something that most people are not looking at is post spawn. I will troll my brains out, and so often are you picking up fish that are just not seeing any baits at all, because there's always a couple patterns going here. And I'm looking here, Jay, you know, your small spinner bait thing that is falls in that busky thing, a bunch of those CS lures, you know, I'm looking here and I was trying to find kind of a good example. If you got the 3/8 ounce CS lures and the 1/4 ounce CS lures, which are right in that size zone.
There's a Fish Lab spinnerbait that I started using last year. That thing is really good too. I love the trailer on it. Yeah, good presentation.
Yeah, I mean, that, and you can add again with those. You can add a lot, but I mean, I think the trick for a lot of people that they could put some more fish in the boat is getting up in the smaller stuff and downsizing to this degree. You know, especially on pressure water, you're just going to be out fishing people 5-1, because they're just, you know, it's one of those things. It's easy to tell musky guys to downsize and they do it, and then they revert back to what they know. And I see it every year. And that's why I go to kind of the busky thing, like concentrate on it like you're a bass angler, or approach it from that standpoint where you're not reaching for, you know, a 7-inch shallow rater going, oh, they might be hitting this. Leave it alone. It's so hard for guys to do, where you go, they've got a bait full of musky baits and they just want to use them, right? It's that self-control thing where, well, I just want to try this. I just want to do this. No, if you approach it like Jay, you were saying, you know, you could take it down like a 55-pound braid, a little titanium leader, a lightweight leader, and a 300-size reel, or heck, even a 200-size reel. And you can tangle with some giants up in the shallows if you're willing to dedicate time to those approaches. My trick that I'll whip out, like I said, more so than anything, is hitting some deep stuff. You know, everybody goes, well, they're all up shallow. Most of them, but you can still pick up some deep edge fish and the further you get from the spawn, the truer that seems to be. And I'll just wreck fish with that freaking Howler deep. Just crush them, because that thing runs so deep. Just size, the speed you're able to get it at, that's something to look at. And you know, the other one that comes to mind where it is a musky bait, but I like it for the same purpose, is a little 4-inch deep shad from Slammer. And that's actually just a killer bass bait anyway. But the 4-inch body Slammer deep shad it falls in that category where I like that bait as a trolling presentation, but also as ripping. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing. And the biggest thing that's going to help you in this scenario coming into the, you know, the season opener, coming into whatever we're faced with, adding pauses, adding extended hang time to all your retrieves, right? Yeah. It's going to be the thing. It always is the thing of, if there's ever been just a truism that year to year to year to year, you know, who knows what our complaints will be this year about how fishing has been, you know, or what's going to transpire out through the course of the year. But I can tell you something that is undeniable, and it is going to happen, and is, you are going to catch more fish if you slow things down, add hang time in this season opener post-spawn period. Period. You know, it just is what it is. Before I move on, Jay, what what's the vibe? What's your outlook, at least for the northern zone? I mean, southern zone, they're definitely well throughout it. I mean, what are you thinking? Has it been warmed up enough? You think the fish will be completely post-spawn by the time it opens up for Wisconsin?
I talked to Herbie this morning. He was, because he's down in southern Wisconsin for a while, probably till June.
Yeah.
And he was saying fish are still spawning. So, you know, if he can get in the boat and start doing some trips in early May, once opener hits down there, he's, you know, prepared for it to be a little funky for a while. Those were his words. So I thought maybe the fish were, we were talking about that the other day, you know, 3 hours south of where I am right here right now, you know, that, you know, the spawn would be over by this Saturday. But he's saying it's still lingering in there. As crazy as it sounds, they've had ice out for like, I don't even know, 2 months or something ridiculous. Yeah. So it's that's where they at. I guess it's just kind of a slow warm up. You know, I imagine waters are, I don't know, low 50s, something like that.
You know, it's like, who knows? I mean, dealing with split, mixed up stuff on in my neck of the woods. Everybody is. That's already the first thing out of the bag. That one's pre-spawn. That one's post-spawn. Catch them however you want. You know, I've been hammering fish, and it's like, catch them on bass tackle. Catch them on freaking, you know.
Yeah, you're doing something every day. You know, when I've been hearing the report from you, you know what you caught. You know, you had that. You know, it's like one day you'll have a four fish. It's musky fishing. You know, you get four one day, and then the conditions change, and you're doing completely different tactic the next day. You know, because you have to.
That's the read, though. I mean, I don't. I had a banner day. You know that.
Well, it's the whole thing. It's the whole thing. It's just like, yesterday they were hitting top waters.
Well,
you know?
And that's the thing is I had a wicked good day. And the next day, you just can't run the same game plan. That would probably be the lesson there because, you know, I go out, put Scungosaurus Rex in the boat, as you know, right? So it was like, that's a different sized one, isn't it? That's a
Hog City.
Yeah, a little Hog City in the boat. Mm-hmm. Subsequently, Jay, like minutes later, a 46 hit the net, and I was like, "Man, that's cute." But we were like, "Man, whatever."
Look at that little guy.
Look at that cute thing. Let's just shake him loose. But I freaking got, you know, the dinosaur in the boat there for the year. If that's the biggest of my year, I'm good. But anyway, had that day. Obviously, great day on the water. Came back the next day. Guess what I did? I checked my bait fish. I thought about the weather. Thought about what had changed in the last, 11 and a half hours since I left. And things were different. And I did my 3-point check and I went, I better do something different because this has nothing to do with yesterday. And coming off the heels of putting four fish over mid 40 or, you know, 45 and up in the boat in a pretty small window, doing a tactic I will tell you all about it some other time because that was a weird one. Still dialing it in. I'm not holding anything back, but I want a couple more under the belt before I go, hey, this is a thing. But, you know, found a pattern, looked at the scenario as a whole and went, no, this is different. It's what it was easy to do would have been going, oh, let's do the exact same thing that we did yesterday.
Let's give it a try.
It's a different day.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm doing right now. And I, you know, as things warm up and water temps progress and the seasonality progresses, that's the trick to continued success where you've got to be able to look at it from a logical standpoint and go, this is what is taking place right here, right now, not what I want it to be. Right. You know, I had a great guy. He was in from Utah and got to fish with this cool guy this week. And we were discussing that. And he said, you know, he's a podcast listener and kind of one of those things of, sometimes it's the most simple thing that will be said, but when you're thinking about it, overthinking, underthinking, whatever it might be, you've got to take a step back and go, am I trying to force my will on the situation, or is this what the environmental cues and everything else are telling me to do? And I think that's the hard thing that people struggle with, is you have to go, am I trying to force what I want, or is this the scenario? You know, so what Jay was saying about banging it up out there, come back the next day, go, okay, gonna do something else. And I think that's the hard part in the spring, is like, especially when you're coming out with musky fever, right? I just say that to be the voice of reason in your head to go, okay, you got musky fever, you're ready to rock and roll, but nothing will satiate your musky fever quite like catching them. You know, so you've got to approach it with some logic and reason and really get a read on the water. What were you going to say, Jay?
Well, a couple things. I mean, and that's part of musky fever too, early season especially, is it's like we all got hopefully a bunch of new baits, you know, over the winter or over the off season, and you're anxious to try them. And a lot of times these presentations are huge, so they might not be appropriate for the time.
Yeah, put away your new toys.
So, restraint, you know. Bit. So, yeah, you downsize and all that. Quickly mention your three. Could you quickly talk about your 3-point bait check that you do on the water for those that haven't heard that?
If they haven't, they have. But not, you pound it back in there. Get everybody focused again.
Three-point bait check.
Mm-hmm. A lot of, like I said, a lot of these guys, you've been winter dreaming, and now it's finally coming around. Mm-hmm. All right, let's revisit a cut. Screw it. Let's revisit some important stuff. We're supposed to do Q&A, but let's reinvent. You said that, and there's some other things to revisit and refocus on. 3-point bait check. You know, I pounded on in the book. What it is, in simplest of terms, is I am keying in on a shallow, a mid-depth, and a deep area that consistently hold bait fish. Each and every time that I hit the water and I'm working on patterning, I check these three areas because they allow me to identify bait quickly and they consistently hold bait under certain scenarios, right? It is like my gold standard on the water. So if I do a 3-point check, which is one shallow, one mid, one deep, and bait fish are concentrated on my mid check, guess where I'm going to focus at? To start with. Now, if bait fish are congregated deep, it's very simplistic. Now, the key of that is not you just drive around and find three things and you go, wow, I have three spots and I check them and they never have bait, or they always have bait.
Yeah.
There's structural study that needs to be done there. But if you whatever your home waters are, if there's something you consistently fish or multiple bodies of water, I've got tons of bodies of water that I fish, and I do the same thing on them. Is I will spend the time to look for patterns in bait fish and look for areas that kind of suit my needs for that, because you need to understand this is where bait goes when conditions are poor and they're deep, right? It's not the only place they go, but you go, hey, when it's a really bad cold front, the base of this point always has bait fish on it. Cool. Here's a bar, a mid-depth hump, or whatever. Now, the next, like I said, conditions are X, Y, and Z, and there's always bait fish on this mid spot. Conditions are X, Y, Z, and there's always bait fish in this shallow zone. That provides you a foundational basis of where to start. Opposed to, hey, that looks good over there, and you drive your boat over there and you cast. Right? So look at it from that lens, and bringing that up sort of harkens to freaking the crap I did on the app all year long and got ready for everybody. If you're trying to pattern, you're trying to come out season opener, you're trying to get set up here, the freaking musky journal on the app, start using it, right? If you're not patterned, start journaling what is taking place so you don't misremember, right? That X, Y, and Z, you know, here's the conditions for the day I was out and this happened and I saw bait here.
Yeah.
At least so you have a solid something that you can revisit. That's imperative so that you have consistent data collection and you've got it right there in your hand. So that is the basis of the 3-point check. So we've found three places that under certain conditions, each of which holds bait fish with consistency that allows us to start from there. The other thing I'll say is this, is forget coming out fresh. Forget everything you knew about last year's vegetation. Right? And you'll see guys where they go, there's a weed bed over here, and they like fish it year after year after year, different or the same. Whereas, man, those edges change. There's so much at play on where vegetation is and how it's composed and how it's comprised subsurface. I've seen years where certain weed beds never come in and there's weed beds that are deep now, or I've seen that the edge is far different than it was the year previous.
Or if it's a different type of weed altogether.
There you go. Don't take it for granted, which is, guess what? Go out there and spend the time to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And from another discussion on the boat this week, I had an old head on the boat. I mean, this guy's been musky fishing longer than I've been alive. You know, one of those type. Oh, back in 19... And, you know, we were just kind of just discussing the topics of that. And it was just like getting into, he was pre-electronics. And we were just kind of discussing, you know, the stuff nobody wants to do. He's like, yeah, when you didn't have side scan and you definitely didn't have live imaging, your first day in camp in Canada, or you're going to frickin' Minocqua or Hayward, your first day on the water was figuring it out. You know, just marking stuff. And I think that's lost on a lot of people now, which is, you know, they go out and it's from the second that they stop the boat to the second it goes back on the trailer, that it's an attempt to catch a muskie, which is great. That's the point. But man, it's far easier with a little bit of planning and a little bit of recon, you know, where, you know, get out and figure it out. You have to. Nobody can tell you. You're not going to go, well, the weeds were this, and this last year, or the edge was this, and this. Just make sure that you put your effort, a little time and effort in to see what has changed or what is changing. That would be another thing to just pound in folks' head, you know, when you're coming into this. Because Lord knows what's happened under the ice, what's taking place that's going to change. You know, whether it be the introduction of these freaking crayfish, and now there's not a single weed in the lake, Jay, or the edges change, or, you know, there's new timber. That's something that also should be noticed. Freaking, you know, is there a new lay down? Are there different lay downs? Did that tree rot? Just taking the time to identify that will pay off huge dividends. You know, it's not as exciting as coming through there and losing your mind and casting and blasting. But the more you know, the more fish you catch. And I think that's really true of, like, from all my guiding and, you know, been doing this for so many years, where the win for me often is not, oh, I know some great area, right? I know the right spot. No, I understand the composition of some structure and cover. But I also know where the small details are, all right? I know where there's the slightest change in things, and I'm sure as shit going to make sure a cast lands there, right? Or I know how a tree lays in the water. Here's the angle that this is laying in there. Or, you know, this is that transition from bottom transition where it's hard to soft transition. You know, so get back out. You know, we've always encouraged people, you know, go do some, what is it, non-sport fishing, Jay, up north or whatever. Wherever you're at, you know, get out there and check some things out, even if you can't musky fish, and focus on not relearning, but reacclimating, reacquainting yourself to the new surroundings, even if it's your home water. You know, that's going to pay dividends. What else, Jay? What else should be pounded in people's heads before they get back out there, at least for the Wisconsin thing?
You know what you're talking about, the 3-point paycheck, you know, practicing on your home water, I gotta admit, is really good in terms of applying that to new water. You know, once you start taking note of that system and using that setup every morning or afternoon, whenever you go out, it'll just make you that much better and that much more aware when you do, you know, take a trip or whatever, you know, take that Canadian trip in the summer or whatever, you're going to be a lot more practiced.
Well,
and tuned in.
How many musky guys?
I like it.
It's something that just works and it checks a couple boxes, but you said something operative and what you said was attuned. How many musky guys are observing bait on their electronics? Your downscan size? Not many. They're not paying attention often to the bait fish. This forces you to observe what is taking place and you get better with your electronics. Right? Every time you just do it, it's the first 10 minutes of your trip, whatever. Okay. I'm spending time looking at this. I'm observing bait fish. I'm going through that motion. Whether you need to or not, you've got to feel for what's taking place. Right? Then what you're saying is transposing that to a new area. I mean, you know, I don't think you're going to be able to just launch out in Canada, bam, here's, I'm going to check these three areas. But you at least have a far better grasp and a far higher comfort level with what your electronics are telling you. You know, for sure, where you go, oh, okay, cool. Because you don't want to fish below them. I can promise you that. You know, you don't want to fish above or below them too much. And that's going to help you in the long run there. Anyway, goodness. Mm-hmm. Ramble. We better get to some Q&A here. Knock some of these out. Knock out the dust. I'm sure I'm waiting. It's like you spend all winter trying to catch up. And, you know, here any moment once people really start making casts out of anger here that the inbox is gonna blow up. It'll be never ending. Dan, greetings again from Slimelander. Steve, can you break down the steps, tactics, weather, and moonwatch to have a successful trip on the water with a week in advance? Do I write down what way the wind is blowing every day for a week? Example, fish the wind blown side of the lake, embrace the suck, kiss the musky. Okay, anyway. What he's asking, how do you plan ahead? So, another concept here. And going into whatever, whether it be a trip, you know, whether it be the season opener, whatever it is. If you're not there to basically mentally conceptualize what's taking place. I've talked about it, and it works. You've got to really have a significant grasp on the cardinal directions of a body of water, right? So what is the north, south, east, west orientation of a body of water, you know? And once you understand how wind is impacting it, you understand water clarity, you understand the forage, you can basically go through what's happening in your head. Now, that sounds, if to the uninitiated, it sounds crazy, but it's like when we're on a big body of water in Canada, or I'm on my home water here. You know, I don't have to be there to tell you what's going on because I've seen it, right? Okay, the wind's coming out of the southwest. It's doing this. It's doing that. And I can name 10 places that are positively impacted by that. And I can name another 20 places that's not a good thing, you know, which is conceptualizing how wind, waves, weather are affecting a body of water without being there because you've seen it, done it, and conceptualize it. Okay? So, what I'm going to look at if I'm trying to plan a trip, and he's looking at all these elements, you know, what's a step-by-step breakdown? I don't do it step-by-step personally because it's, you know, there's not every body of water I can do this on, but If you have a very good grasp, again, starting with the cardinal directions, of what a body of water is like, you know what the forage base is, you know what the composition of the lake is, you know not every little factor, but you know enough about this lake that you can envision what a sustained 15-mile-an-hour winds from the west look like and how is it impacting that body of water. You know, is Jimmy's Bay getting blown out, but, you know, Terry's Cove is protected? Or, you know, is there a rock bar, a sandbar that's getting washed with waves? Or is there this or that? Blah, 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 blah. It is basically just the mental imagery of how wind and weather are affecting things. And you can take that to the next step. You know, the wind is easy because you go, okay, this is the shoreline that would be windblown, or this, or that, or the other. But the other element of that would be looking at a body of water, and you go, okay, I know where it's at seasonally right now. I know where the weed growth is. I know where fish will retreat or how far back they would retreat in a cold front, because I have, you know, baseline information or precursory knowledge of what's taking place in that body of water. So how do you know? It's the same thing as like starting a guide trip. I'm not trying to sound too far out there, but this is how it goes in my head. And I talked to like Herbie or whoever, you know, what are you doing tomorrow? Well, I got to figure it out. Right. And it's the same thing of I'm going, okay, tomorrow is hell. Let's just do it. I'm trying to work you through it. So I'll tell you, I'm on. What is it? I look at the weather tomorrow. Some sun in the morning, increasing clouds during the afternoon, stray shower, thunderstorm is possible, 83, hot.
Ooh. Oh.
Southwest 5 to 10. Okay, screw it.
Ooh.
So 5 to 10, southwest, which is going to blow straight against current tomorrow, where I fish, right?
So against the what now?
Against the current. So okay. Any water coming downstream. So actually, if it's actually blowing, and they're always wrong, but it'll be 10 to 15. But these are things, you know, and I'm just going to try to walk it through, I guess, how I do it, because I don't have a step-by-step, but I'm looking at the freaking weather, okay? And so I've had fish staged in open water, but adjacent to major structures, okay? That is where I'm at as of today. That has held true for the last couple days, and they're just about a cast off or two cast off adjacent of major points, creek mouths, or giant changes, right? Big changes. And so what am I going to do in my thought process? Because I don't know how to articulate it perfectly, but how do I work through this? Okay, so today was little to no wind. And it was actually, so there's basically a 180 wind shift, right? So, yeah, the wind is going to shift 180 degrees on me. Okay, that's going to change small bait fish, and it's actually going to blow against the current, so it's going to be choppy and disrupted. And right now, when I look at that, and I'm thinking mentally of how that's going to hit of the different bays. And so I'm looking for warmer water, but that means a lot of the bigger bays are going to get a cooling effect, right? So I am going to look for things that are buffered from a southwest wind that have major structural features adjacent. Is that too much of a mouthful?
Okay, it's interesting.
Right? Well, that's it. And in my head, I'm going, okay, well, there's that point and that point and that point, which is a precursor. We're talking about, it's like reading the water we talked about in the book, or it's simple as that. Okay. How do I put it? What's a good analogy here? Okay, Jay, you know, if the wind, you've got to be super familiar with something, but it's like, okay, if the wind blows at your house a certain way, you know, there'll be leaves in the yard, right? I know that sounds stupid, but okay, if it blows too hard, what I'm doing and what I think a lot of guides have done for a long time, they're going, okay, before it even happens, this is what will shift. This is how wind will affect things. Now, what is the weather? I have partially cloudy, which means, okay, for me to find an active fish tomorrow, it will be off of points. and some of these major structural drop-offs and breaks, right, adjacent in these areas. So I need bait fish. I need these places to be slightly shielded from the wind, right, as my target zones. So opposed to running hell and half acre on the lake, I know off the top of my head now five or six places that it should be top tier choices that check parts of that pattern already that now are going to have less of a negative impact on wind for this scenario, because in the spring, what do we want? We want warming. We don't want cooling. Well, I know right now if it's only partially cloudy with a little bit of chop, I can go moderate depth most likely. I don't need to go superbly deep because fish will be higher in the water column. So I'm able to work out 85% of the crap before I even step foot on the lake. Now that's, again, familiarization with the body of water, but you take, like, you know, Lost, we fished the crap out of that in St. Germain, so what does it matter, right? Let's talk that lake. What side is, Jay, what side is the public ramp on Lost?
South End.
South End, okay. So you look at that and you have weeds on one side, you got two reefs, weed bed on the north end, so it's, you know, and then you've got weeds on the west. I mean, you look at a lake like that and you have a major shift and you go, bam, okay, if I've got freaking a east blow, where is it going to end up? Is it a cooling effect of that? Do you see where I'm going with it? Maybe I'm too far afield. Maybe I need to rein it in, folks. I apologize. But where, you know, if you have a baseline and you understand, give it X, Y, and Z, you got, what is 60? Okay, back it up. Come with the baseline. Jay, on a perfect day, right, perfect weather conditions, it is 65 degree water with a light ripple on the water, right, and it is July. Where are the muskies? They're in the weeds, right? Perfect July day, 65 to maybe 70 degree water, you know, of how they'll be staged. So the baseline for me is there how much is the current weather scenario a negative impact from them being shallow and active, right? So the goal is shallow and active. Is it east wind on Lost that's blowing towards the Merm? Is that negative? Probably, right? Because the east wind, there's a cold wind most of the time. And so, you know, what's going to shift there? Are they going to drop back? Well, they're not probably going to get blown further east. Blown further to the west side if they're already in perfect condition. So where are those fish going to do? They're going to drop off to deeper breaks. So what I'm doing is I'm going, what are perfect conditions? What are the best conditions I could possibly have for this day? How many degrees up or down are we off from there? I don't mean degrees of temperature. I mean degrees away from perfection, I guess.
Okay.
You follow me here? Maybe I'm trying to explain something I've never explained, which is how I read that of going, is this a perfect day? Probably not. So it's not a perfect fishing scenario. So how far removed are we from that? Right? A cold front that drops 50 degrees and the water temperature plummets might be the most extreme case of that. So we may need to make the biggest adjustments. But, you know, I'm doing that and then I'm looking at the day-to-day going, what's going to happen with the wind, weather, and the impacts that could start shifting patterns? Right. So that's why I'm looking at, like I said, tomorrow, all that forecaster just said, 5 to 10 wind shift. I know how that's going to impact against what water's being moved. I know that's probably going to really rip away some of those superficial surface temps if that's sustained. And so I'm eliminating water mentally very quickly while focusing on what are the most likely places that will be productive. And I guess, like I said, that's from doing it every day, but the flip side of that coin is going, always having that baseline of how far from perfect are we? I don't want to overcompensate, but I definitely don't want to undercompensate to stay dialed in. Anyway, God grief, sorry.
Yeah, in your case with your scenario for tomorrow, doing a 180 degree, you know, wind shift and warming and clouds rolling in, will the bait fish in the by the afternoon be significantly higher than they have been under that scenario?
Well, that's a different scenario. So it's spring, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So guess what I don't want? I don't want wind because it rips superficial temps away because things go up nasty shallow. And so a blowy, windy spring day is not what I want. I want it calm, ripply. You know, the surface temps are able to permeate down in the water column and it's really getting things going, right? So will it affect bait fish? Yeah, they'll drop back. Like they'll drop out of like the areas that I'm thinking about that are going to have the wind blowing across them the majority of the day. The bait fish that are present there and obviously subsequently the predators are going to drop back out to depth, right?
Have the bluegills and crappies finished spawning in your home water?
I've got bluegill spawn going on.
Okay.
You know, and then, gotcha. Yeah, and you have different time. We're an odd mix here, but you know, it's not going to be. But I'm just trying to give like a baseline representation of like kind of how I'm looking at it. Mm-hmm. And I guess I mean we break. Screw it. Forget Q&A. Maybe it's like a breaking down a whole day, as long as I'm not rambling too much for you, of how I'm looking at it, which is, again, starting with perfection, right? So what's perfection? Well, in the spring, it's different than what I mentioned earlier than in the summer. It's, okay, it is a warmer, sunnier, light penetrating. Things are getting going. There's a lot of energy transference of solar energy to the shallows, right? Anything that breaks that up, i.e. wind, clouds, can actually be a detriment until the overall temperature levels, right? Because what you got to realize in the spring, pertinent to right here, right now, is the extreme shallows that are most of the spawning areas are far warmer than the first break line, like your first major break towards the basin, right? And this is something, and I mean, it's such a teachable thing or a learning moment when you take like a Hawk 2 submersible thermometer or you take anything that has a temp reading and you do it at depth in the spring. You go, okay, well, the shallows are 59, but out here at 12 feet deep, it's 41, right? Those are different worlds. So for sure, anything that pushed the fish out of that shallow warm zone or breaks up that shallow warm zone sets you back into an entirely different level of activity, an entirely different level of engagement. That's why I'm looking at each day and just take it with the spring. Screw it. Maybe that makes more sense. You know, so here's your warm, you know, high puffy Simpsons clouds, light ripply wind, plenty of sun hitting things, warming things up day. How far out of alignment to that kind of perfect scenario are we? Right? Did it rain a bunch last night? And guess what rain does? Rain takes freaking ground, you know, it takes creek water, groundwater, blah, 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 introduces it into areas, right? And it often can knock the temperatures down in the spring as creeks flow in. Sometimes it's higher, sometimes lower. Depends on the creek, right? But you can't go, wow, it rained last night and that's great. You've got to look at that, each individual A body of water, but going, okay, what factors are at play here? Right? Do we have a nice warm, let's say we have a nice warm sunny day in the spring, but it rained like a mortal hell 3 days ago. Well, guess what? There's going to be a bunch of silty cold water entering in, and it's going to push everything out of the shallow, right? What effects are taking place, and how do we compensate? That's just understanding and having an understanding of how the whole system, how everything interplays, right? So, you know, is it the spring day, or like you, I was saying earlier, like the summer day? Here's the perfect, you know, overcast, drizzly day in July, right? Wow, bring it on. You know, that's a super high activity level day with fish, you know, and a subsequent muskies higher in the water column and aggressive, you know, what?
It's kind of like a polar opposite, you know, pre 60 degree water.
Yeah.
This is exactly what you're talking about.
Right. And that's what I'm trying now. I'm rambling, but I'm trying to get it. There's so many things to like articulate, but like those are two entirely different things. Yeah, and it's water temperature dictates simple. Let me back it up. Ambient water temp, the water temp that muskies are in dictates their caloric needs and their activity levels, right? So the deeper, the colder, the slower, right? You need to have consistency that draws bait fish into the shallows. Now, everybody goes spawn, 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 spawn. That's great. But what gravitates muskies shallow, what draws and holds them in the shallows, aside from the act of spawning, is the prevalence of bait fish, right? That's what I'm looking for, and that's why I'm paying so much attention to these small changes going. That entire food chain, it whiplashes up and down the food chain dramatically, right? Where we've got to have little fry for the sunfish to eat. I mean, you got to have this, and you got to have that, and you got to have this before the muskies are there. When we're looking from a patterning standpoint of just purely based on forage availability. And that's a matter of stability and you know, how that's interplaying. Because it's not that muskies go, I want to be shallow and warm, I want to be cold and deep, I want to be this and that. They want to have access to easy meals. And the reason it's not so simple as going, you know, 1 + 1 = 2 in a patterning thing for muskies is there's so many variables, and not so much how the muskies react, but how the bait fish and the entire food chain reacts throughout the entire process. You know, that's the kicker there. But I mean, did any of that make sense, Jay? I just lost my mind. I'm trying to explain how to plan a day. I didn't know that was where I was going with it, but it's like, you know, this is the kind of the way my brain's working. You know, he asked that one question and here I'm down the rabbit hole, which is that's the daily exercise of how is this going to change things? Is anything
the pre-spawn and the spawn are truly irregular times for a muskie. So outside, you know, that 2 week period or whatever, maybe 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that.
Well, I mean, pre-spawn and the act of spawning, they're not the true. There's like pre-spawn fishing period, and there's like stage two spawn, and the fish that are like staging outside of spawning areas, there's a certain time where they're shut down too. They're just there, right? It's like the boys are lined up on one side and the girls are lined up on the other side and everybody's just kind of waiting for the music start. Yeah, those fish are not doing musky-ish things, you know. And then throughout the spawn period itself, when you get into the act thereof, yeah, you can subtract 3 weeks of the year. So you got 49 weeks where they act like muskies.
Were they? That's what I was trying to elaborate on or illustrate.
Yeah.
Yeah, you think about Wisconsin, you think about, and this is probably a good thing, it's probably a positive thing, but every single species that is targeted, they're ideally targeted when they're spawning or mating.
Uh-huh.
In Wisconsin. You know, turkeys.
Right.
Deer.
Yeah.
Bluegills.
Yeah.
You know,
betting bass, betting large.
Definitely walleye.
Right.
Gophers. You know, everything. Chipmunk. Everything.
Is there a gopher spawn?
Well, they mate, Steve, and believe me, it's an electric time of the year. You want to be there when it happens.
Got him.
Well, no, but Muskie, hey, and that's part of the beauty of the sport, probably.
Yeah.
You know, the way I look at it is that we're trying to protect them. It's the one good thing that,
well,
the DNR in Wisconsin is doing. Yeah. Is it just like, no, we really don't want to have an open season when they're spawning. They're too easy to damage at that point. So
yeah, they're not.
That's
guys.
Great. That's yeah, great. Yeah. But it is the one thing I can think of that is protected in the upper Midwest, probably from that very scenario. So, you know, most animals are, you know, you look at deer, it's just like, I mean, they're out of their minds during the rut. It's a mm-hmm. great time to hunt them, but they're not themselves, you know. It's almost taking advantage of them. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You don't have to worry about muskies eating during that period. I can promise you that. They're just mm-hmm. doing, but, you know, God, freaking rabbit hole of all rabbit holes. Sorry, folks.
No, it's cool. Sure,
hopefully I didn't confuse too many people there. We'll just get to the Q&A next week, Jay. After that, freaking nutty. But like I said, it's hard to articulate, you know, how you're putting that together and where the brain goes. But anyway, we're going to circle back on Sunday. Jay Bird, say
sweet. Good night. Thanks, guys. Night. I saw you on the park in your Ranger boat.